Hey, welcome to Medicine on Call. This is Dr. George. I'm back after my little hiatus. I just want to welcome my listeners back. And since I've been gone, I've been keeping my ear to the ground of all this, I guess, this unearthing of Obamacare. And it's not good. I mean, anybody who really honestly thinks at this point that the bill is going to do what it said it's going to do, I mean, it's beyond low information voter. It's in the realm of la la land at this point. You know, I was talking to you, Dave, at the beginning of the show before it started. And one of the things that came out, one of the congressmen had the unmitigated gall to state that he thought it was unfair that his aides would be subject to Obamacare, that they couldn't stay on the government dole like the rest of the Congress critters. And he most likely voted for it. It was a Democrat. And to have the audacity to say that it's not fair that they have to, you know, join the rest of us in entering the system of rationing, death panels, restriction of care, with the privilege of paying more to enter that system, just, it galls me, to put it mildly. I mean, what kind of people are these up in Congress? I didn't think it can get any worse, but every day it's something else. And I can't stand these, I guess they're kangaroo courts, if you want to put it that way. People come up and they testify and everybody's so outraged. If they bother to read half the things that they sign in the law, maybe we wouldn't be in this situation. I mean, I'm just ranting this morning because I'm just so upset. I mean, it's just, yesterday I met with a doctor, a person who refers me patients, and there's another colleague now that's left the profession in the prime of her career. She's sick of it. And so now she's doing hospice care part-time. So going from a thriving internal medicine practice, leaving patients in the lurch, not being able to do what you trained to do and love to do because people like Congress pass these laws and then demonize anybody who has the common sense to say, there's no way this is going to work. 30 million people shoved into a system that's already bankrupt is not good medical care. It never will be good medical care. I don't care what they say, and no matter how they try to shove this down our throats. And, you know, if it was so fabulous, everybody should have to do it, from the president, the, you know, Supreme Court members on down. It's a tale of two cities. It's like we're living one reality and they're living another. And they don't match. They don't mix. And for those folks who think that they're for you, that they're working for you, that they care about you, you are about to get a major rude awakening.
You want me to disagree with me?
Yeah, you know, we can play devil's advocate.
It is. I'm praying that Congress finally stands up and doesn't fund it. That's the only thing that I'm like you. I have my doubts that Congress, I haven't seen Congress do anything yet. You know, the Pelosi saying, pass it and then we'll read it. It's like worms coming out of a caucus that they just keep coming, and we find out things, and people are going to get a hit in the head when they have a 30% increase in their.
If they're lucky to have a 30% increase, talk about really 160%, 400% increase. This is not a small little $10 increase here. I mean, they finally unveiled the Silver Plan, and that means that those folks who think they're going to be able to go to any doctor they want to, well, they're going to have to pony up $2,000 out of pocket before the insurance part will kick in. $2,000 deductible. That's what they're going to have to look at. $45 copay, $250 ER visit. And just because it says $45, let me tell you, if you have anything done, the $2,000 deductible kicks in. So if you need a CT scan or you need the surgery, you need the lab test, then you're going to have to pony up to $2,000 before the insurance actually kicks in. And I'm not so sure it's 100% covered. So it may be 80%, maybe 70%. So you're still on the hook.
Or, gee, 2 years after it happens, they'll change the rules and you'll still have to come up with money.
Maybe. You know what they're going to find? I'm going to tell you what they're going to find out. $2,000 is not enough because more people access the system. They can't afford. The system can't afford the influx of more people, which means the deductible is going to rise. And this is all set out in advance. This is not rocket science. This is how insurance works from the get-go. I've been saying this for years now. Health insurance and health care are not the same thing. Now everybody will finally understand what that means. Just because you're covered, I can tell you this, it happens every day in my practice and every day in every doctor's practice across the country. People come in with insurance, PPOs, HMOs, POSs, you know, top of the line Cadillac insurance plans. And let's say they don't have any out of pocket. Rare, but it does happen. You know, they have a $10 copay. Well, you still have to be pre-certified. So if you need your tonsils out, you need your hip replacement, you need your eye surgery, and please, everybody, if you have an insurance card, turn the thing over and look at it, because it says the fact that you're covered doesn't mean that you're going to get benefits. It's not a guarantee of insurance coverage, and that's the rub. That's where they get you. That is the small print. That basically means they own you. You can pay all your premiums to the cows come home, years on end, thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars. When you hit 65, 70, let's say you start at 20, and God forbid something horrible happens to you, they can still deny your coverage. So you
How
just gave them
well
all this
I know.
Money for the privilege of them to say, tough. And they're the last arbiter. Which is really sick, Dave. I know you want to say something. Let me just say this one last thing. Under Obamacare, it's no longer the insurance company that gets to decide this. Okay, it's not Aetna, Cigna, UnitedHealthcare. It's Kathleen Sebelius, your friend, who would like to see little children die because they want to do a study on whether or not it's okay for someone under 12 to get a lung transplant. That's what you're dealing with. And her mantra is, I love this, I'm not a physician. Well, why the hell are you making any decisions on someone else's health if you're not a physician? Why isn't anybody complaining about this small little detail? This boggles your mind, doesn't it?
I know we've talked about this before. How much in cahoots with, and that means, I know you know what cahoots mean, but, are the insurance companies and the hospitals? Are they lockstep?
This is a very complex question. Again, it's a tale of two cities. Now we're talking corporate interests versus healthcare. They're all in bed with each other. The insurance companies partner with certain hospitals as preferred hospitals and preferred providers because you scratch my back, I scratch yours. Then you have It's just such a grid. It's sickening, actually. You have certain insurance companies will partner with pharmacies. So the preferred pharmacy or preferred lab or preferred hospital, meaning they're all on the same side and they just refer back and forth to each other. They keep the money in their pot and they decide in terms of the pharmaceutical companies, what's the preferred drug this month? That means they've worked with the insurance company pharmaceutical PBMs, the pharmacy benefit management companies, to decide, let's just gouge on this drug this week. And let's make people pay third tier because it's really popular or it really works and doctors really want to write for it. So we'll just make this more expensive so we can just get some more cash. Let's face it, that's exactly what's going on. It's restriction of trade. It's cartel. It's mafia. It's you name any kind of entity that has you by the short hairs, this is what it is. And the hospitals are working overtime to get rid of their competition. They've managed to buy carrots so far, suck up all of the, I wouldn't say all of the talent, because there's a lot of independent physicians who will not play this game, who are outstanding. and Willie will just bite the bullet, you know, tie their belt tighter to keep their practice open so they can see their patients. But those who are sheep and those who are afraid and those who need the comfort of a paycheck have gone lockstep into the hospital system as employees, either directly or they've sold their practice to the hospital or they become what we call accountable care organizations. So they're loosely affiliated, but they share the same medical record system, the same algorithm-driven system. So a hospital may have a certain way to treat heart disease or cholesterol or whatever they come up with in their little pod, and these doctors' offices toe that line. They follow the same algorithms. They don't deviate from this, quote, standard of care for that hospital. And they get rewarded for it. I guess they share the reimbursements that the hospital gets. They get a piece of it. Again, no autonomy. So if you find that you want to treat a patient with a supplement, coenzyme Q, you know, CoQ10, as opposed to Lipitor, because you've read studies and you know it's better and less heart damaging, good luck. You're going to end up on the peer review section. You know, this is all about control, and it's about money. And whoever controls the pocketbook has the power. It used to be way back, not even that long ago, 15, 16 years ago, that it was the doctor and the patient that controlled this pocketbook. And that's where it should be, because that's where you have innovation. That's where you have quality. You have the drive to be really good because you have to keep your business. You have to compete with the doctor down the road. You better offer something cheaper and better and faster recovery if you want to stay open. Now, who gives a damn? If the hospital doesn't get reimbursed for a procedure, I do balloon sinuplasty, dilation of the sinus, in office. Hospitals don't want to do that. They don't get reimbursed, so they don't offer that. So I have to now do a more aggressive, open procedure on a patient if I go to the hospital, as opposed to if I stay in my office, because there's no impetus for a hospital to do anything innovative because they're not going to make money on it. If they don't get reimbursed for it, it ain't happening. And there's another example of this. I don't know if you saw 60 Minutes last week. I think it was a week ago, where there's now robotic surgery is like the end-all, be-all. And these hospitals have made amazing outlays of money for these robots. And everybody and their mother better start using, I don't care if you're ENT, GYN, neuro, they want that thing used 24/7. Now you've got, because the hospital needs to make money, they're forcing or pushing or encouraging doctors strongly to use this procedure. And now you've got all these complications from this robotic surgery. It's money for them. It's not about quality necessarily. I'm not going to say that they're trying to kill people. I'm not going to go there. But it is more about their bottom line. Their fiduciary responsibility is to their stockholders, their CEO. Not to the doctor, not to the patient. And under Obamacare, that's been doubled down. There's a double down effect on that. You've got time that you need to get that patient in, get them out if you want to be reimbursed. And it's a whole jungle gym of paperwork and regulations. I mean, we can go this after the break, but the cost of healthcare because of Obamacare, Medicare regulations is skyrocketed and the quality has gone down. And again, another example of a tale of two cities.
We'll take a break, and we'll be back right after this.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that eating too little and skipping meals can actually cause you to gain weight? When you do not take enough calories in, your body can actually stop you from losing weight. Your body works best when it is adequately fueled. If you fail to eat enough, your metabolism will slow down, and your body will become stressed and actually hold on to fat. This will lead to muscle loss instead of fat. Exercise and lightweight training will increase endurance and muscle mass and will boost both your metabolism and your sense of well-being. Eat 3 well-rounded meals a day containing a lean protein, fiber, and a complex carbohydrate, such as a whole grain, with 2 snacks, such as fruits or nuts. These will promote healthy weight loss that is long-term. Prior to starting an exercise program, remember to see your doctor if you have any medical problems. Please join me on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
For years, Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center has been providing outstanding care to patients of all ages. They are dedicated to patient satisfaction and have been the recipient of the Georgia Otolaryngology Association Patient Satisfaction Award. They welcome any questions you may have about their services. Their practice includes treatment of asthma, allergies, sleep apnea, snoring, hearing impairments, and chronic sinus disease. Dr. Elena George is a board-certified ear, nose, and throat surgeon. Her training in New York has included training at Manhattan Eye, Ear, and Throat Hospital and Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. She believes in practicing both the art and science of medicine. All patients are seen by Dr. George. All treatment options are discussed, and time will be spent to answer all questions. Their office is located in Atlanta at 1776 Peachtree Road in Suite 260 North Tower, two blocks south of Piedmont Hospital. They are open Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. until 4 p.m. Additional details are available at www.peachtreeentcenter.com. At Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center, you can be confident that you are in good hands with their professional team.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George, and we're talking today about the juxtaposition of actually what's happening and why, and what we're told is what we, I guess, the fiction of what we're supposed to think is happening. I mean, during the break, Dave and I have these awesome conversations, but we were talking about how I think it's a cookie cutter. It's the same iteration of concentration of power, concentration of money, concentration of basically cornering the market and making it corporate driven and getting rid of any version of competition. Before the break, we were talking about how doctors are being removed from the system. There was a study that just came out that it's gone from 25% solo practitioners, small group, to 20% in the last year. 5% have now left or gone into being employed, salaried employees. And the hospitalist, you know, doctors on staff that are on payroll have gone up about 6%. So there's definitely a movement. There will be an endpoint, trust me, because you don't have enough hospitals. I mean, everybody has an endpoint of how many doctors they need slated in their roster. Once they're filled, those folks who went in, and a friend of mine said this, and I absolutely believe she's right. They get you with good salary, reasonable call, everything's fabulous, but once they don't need you anymore and they have other people lined up and their slots are filled, your pay is going to go down. Your call is going to go up because there's someone else who'll take your slot. So you better just get along and do it. So there's no safe harbor. You're depending on somebody's, the beneficence of a hospital, really. They could care less about what doctors want. What they want you to do is make them money.
Generally speaking, when a physician decides, or a small group decides to become the hospital's group,
mm-hmm.
How long? What term is the contract? Do you know offhand, generally speaking?
Probably a 2-year, 1 to 3 year would probably be the norm. But you give up a lot. Let's say you had your own private practice; it's gone. You sold that. You can't compete with them. You might even have to move out of the vicinity. They must have a non-compete, and everybody, all the hospitals now have bought up all of the ancillary. So for me, when I first went into private practice, there were about 5 different surgery centers that I could use, standalone, freestanding, self-funded. They systematically have been bought up by major hospitals and either closed, annexed, but in terms of me taking a patient for self-pay with a reasonable amount of money, it's gone. It's $7,000 an hour in some of these major hospitals to go to the OR just to walk in the door. Not including anesthesia, not including any medications. And the surgery centers are a fraction of that. Everything that Obamacare is wrought, everything that Medicare mushrooms to become, becomes more expensive. I'm thinking about when I was a resident or when I was a medical student. When we were rounding in the hospital, There were nurses. There were RNs, you know, chief nurses. There was us. And there were the attendings. That was it. Now you've got, for the nurses, nurse technicians, nursing assistants, nurses, RNs, PAs, who else do you have? Just regular techs, IV team. I mean, it's like 10 or 11 people just now to take up just space when the people who are usually used to give care are so far away from it now. You've got the least experienced, the least trained person is the front line. So you got a nursing tech that comes in and does the vitals. Used to be the nurse. Nursing tech is trained for, what, 6 months, maybe 8 months, and, you know, DeVry or wherever. All they know is to take a blood pressure. They don't really learn, hey, that's a critical number. I need to get a nurse involved. I need to call an alarm. So it's really sad. But one of the nursing folks that I knew who left nursing, unfortunately, said, you know, you can always tell in the morning we're going to get a code around 6 in the morning because the person has done the vitals but not alerted anybody, and there's code time after that when people die, or it's just a disaster. And it, you know, it's not their fault. You know, 8 months of training, 9 months of training, it can't equal 3 years of nursing. It can't equal 6 years or 7 years of medical training. And there's these guys are expected to be the front line of care. You know, they're the persons that get to see the patient more than a nurse does, because the registered nurse now is a case manager. They used to be the critical care nurse. They used to be the one that took care of the patient and was the liaison between the doctor and the patient. Now what they spend their time doing is making sure that the dots, you know, the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed, there's the right notes in the chart, the person's been admitted with the right designation, observation or inpatient or ambulatory, otherwise the hospital won't get paid. So what they become is the gatekeeper to make sure that the hospital is getting paid for what the patient's diagnosis is, that the paperwork is right. They're not doing patient care anymore. And on the flip side, those that do patient care, let's say the ICU nurses, I've heard horror stories here. Some hospitals don't have a doctor covering the ICU. I've never heard of anything like that. So the nurses are there doing lines. They're the critical care people. They're not trained for that. It's an anesthesiologist or an intensivist that's trained for that. These guys are doing it. And what, I mean, I'm not talking out my rear here. I'm talking to people who do this, who said, I can't do this. This is outside of my scope. I don't want to put patients at risk. I'm out of here. So you've got people with 25 years, 30 years experience who've left the hospital setting because they were asked to do things that they thought was unethical, outside their scope of practice, because it's all about the bottom line. That's the difference. But that's the tale of another tale of two cities. You think that you're going to go to a hospital and get primo care, when in actuality what you're getting is somebody who not well trained in terms of time, in terms of, you know, the scope, and in terms of the intensity of the training. Hospital has the sickest people in it now. You're not talking about people in there for a tune-up anymore. You're talking about folks with multiple medical problems. You name it. They need to have intensive care, even when they're not in ICU, and they're not going to get that. The ER is a first example of that. I have gotten ER calls from people who are like, did you actually see the patient? Do you really know what you're even asking me to consult on? It's outrageous. No embarrassment about it at all. They don't even bother to look at ENT. They just call you up before the patient even comes for the consult. That's laziness, and it's also expensive. So you have now a consult for a patient that's going to be billed by the hospital. I don't get the charge. Let me be perfectly clear. Most ENTs, most people on call do not get paid. They come in. It's part of their due, you know, their service to the hospital. They're doing it for free. So when you're on call for 48 hours or whatever and you get called in, the hospital bills for you, not you. And they're billing major bucks. And if I go into a consult in the hospital, I might get $40 for my consult, but the hospital gets paid. So we're talking about a system that's designed to constantly generate revenue, and the doctors are the ones taking the hit. It's not us making the money. It's not us charging the outrageous bills, but we're the front, we're the face of it. And unfortunately, we have no advocate. The AMA is completely a joke. Who sat there, got in bed with Obamacare because they knew that with the new coding system that they made, that they get to sell to UnitedHealthcare, they're going to get bucks. And then you have the specialty organizations who now are doing maintenance of certification and all this stuff that we have to go through that they get to charge us for, $2,000 here, $2,500 there, just to take a test that you've already taken and passed, by the way, to be board certified. Nobody's saying a thing. I mean, this is all in plain view. They're just making hand over fist, working against doctors and patients. All the good doctors, not all, but it's a steady stream of good doctors leaving the profession.
Aren't most emergency rooms now relying on hospitalists?
More family practice, a lot more family practice in these ERs. And there's been, at least in Atlanta, I can say, because I know these guys, a lot of ER-trained, board-certified doctors have left the ER for hospitals because they're sick of this. They don't want to bill. They don't want to do procedures and order tests that they don't think is necessary. They want to be doctors. And they're opening urgent care, standalone, real competition urgent cares. And there's actually, let me give you one example of how this, we talk about how the competition wants to be removed. Well, there's this chain of urgent cares called Well Street, which is funded by Wall Street and hospitals. And their job was to open up next to any of these independent urgent cares, undercut them, and try to put them out of business. That was their whole goal. It wasn't about patient care. This is the kind of dirty politics and dirty pool these people play. They cannot, and I said it before, these people cannot compete on a level playing field. They're not as good as people who have to go out there every day and make it work. You have to have ingenuity if you're on your own. You can't just depend on somebody to ride someone's coattails. You better be damn good or you will not be in business, no matter what that entity is, medicine, law, you know, opening up a supermarket, I don't care what it is. If you don't compete, then you get lazy, you get bloated, and you could care less about the quality. That's what's going on.
What's the extent, and we got just a minute, what's the extent that an urgent care can go to with a obviously, they're not going to take ambulance calls necessarily, but so it's basically walking wounded is about the extent of what they can do. Do most of them even have x-rays?
Sure. I mean, they're well-stocked. I mean, they have ER doctors, so they can handle, you know, it's not a level one trauma, okay? If you have a gunshot wound, you should not be in there. But if you have bronchitis, pneumonia, you know, even an MI, you can go and get treated there. I mean, if you've got COPD, you've got end-stage renal disease, and you're really sick, that's not a place for you to be. But if you have a flu or, you know, you've got a GI issue, you don't need to be in a hospital ER either. Sit there for 12 hours and get a PA to treat you with God knows what. Or call in a consult that you really didn't need that's going to cost you three times more because they don't know what they're doing. I mean, this is... It's so many layers to this. It's so complex. But when you add these folks into the system, and I'm seeing this, I'm telling you how it is because this is the truth. What they don't know, they order tests for. I'm an ENT. If someone comes in with a paratonsillar abscess, an abscess of the tonsil, I don't order a CT scan for that. That's a clinical diagnosis. It's my judgment. And you take care of business. These guys don't have an ENT covering their ER. What do? They order a CT scan, major, major test, radiation, because they don't know what the hell they're doing. So you end up ordering to CYA, and it costs more. So all this nonsense about there's too many specialists and specialists are ordering so many tests, it actually saves money because the specialist knows when it's an emergency, when you need to go to the $100 million test level. And most of the stuff is routine for us. And in my opinion, every ER should be covered by everybody. You shouldn't have an ER without a trauma surgeon or an ENT or an ophthalmologist. You shouldn't be allowed to open. These people have nothing but family practice, PAs, and nobody else above that. And what do? $1 million tests, transfer patients to hospitals that are covering, and it costs a hell of a lot more money.
We'll take a break on that. We'll be back with more Medicine on Call right after this.
Have you heard of quantitative fluid analysis? Commonly called QFA, this test assesses your body at a cellular level and gives insight into your illness. Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center offers the QFA, an FDA-approved test that can often provide early diagnosis of conditions before they can be detected with other tests. Dr. Elena George believes in an integrative approach to medicine. She believes in treating the problem and not the symptom. Following a review of your results, Dr. George will suggest treatment approaches such as nutritional counseling and or the use of pharmaceutical-grade enzymes and nutritional supplements. Surgery and prescription medication will be recommended only when necessary. Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center is located in Atlanta at 1776 Peachtree Road Northwest in Suite 260 North Tower, two blocks south of Piedmont Hospital. They are open Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. until 4 p.m. Additional details are available at www.peachtreeentcenter.com. Call their office at 404-591-9100 to make an appointment and mention that you heard this ad on Radio Sandy Springs and get 10% off of QFA testing.
Moms, dads, listen to my radio program, Homeschooling for Today, on Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where you'll learn all about how to homeschool on America's Web Radio.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that dizziness may be a sign of heart disease, iron deficiency, high or low blood pressure, low blood sugar, or an inner ear infection? Dizziness can take the form of a spinning sensation, also known as vertigo, or a feeling of lightheadedness. The individual can also feel faint or have a rapid heartbeat. If you take high blood pressure medication, remember to take the medication daily as directed to control your blood pressure. Diabetics must remember to eat after taking their medication and to eat at regular intervals. If you have anemia, make sure to take a multivitamin that contains iron and to eat vegetables such as spinach. Dizziness after a cold or flu may be due to a virus. If you have dizziness, it is important to see your doctor for a complete physical examination. Please join me Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
It's Dr. George. You're listening to Medicine on Call. I think we're taking a long, hard look at medicine as it stands and medicine as it used to be. And I'm an eternal optimist. There's no reason that we have to continue to go down this path. I think we've gotten ourselves into a rut. I think this is all, quite frankly, the fault of doctors and patients. Patients wanted things called in. They want to pay as little as possible, you know, just a copay. Doctors were living in fear. If I don't take an insurance, I won't get a patient. If somebody had stood tall, held the line, none of this would have happened. And this is a perfect example of being driven by fear and ending up behind the eight ball. It happens every single time, and it never works out. No matter what freedom or what you know, choice you give up in the name of safety, in the name of being covered, you know, having better health insurance or keeping your health, this is not the way to do it.
Well, both, in my opinion, both doctors and patients have been driven like sheep. Now, is the sheep herder the insurance companies, or has it always really been the government behind it, driving both like sheep?
The government started it. If you look at the RAND Corporation, that's it's probably right up there with NSA, frankly. But they had these tests. It was a study, basically, that they used us as the guinea pigs for, with the mindset, how do you lower healthcare costs? And it's written. I wrote an article about this a couple years ago. And their whole mantra was, if you make it more expensive to the patient, you will control healthcare costs because they won't access the system. And then they put that into play. HMOs, capitation, the whole insurance model is designed to dissuade you from using it. You pay your premium, you never use it. Obamacare set up exactly the same way. It's $2,000 deductible, co-pays, and there's nothing on the other side that says if you pay into it, you need to get your services because you paid for them. You had paid for them in advance, technically, That's not how the system's set up. It's set up with gatekeepers. It's set up with disincentives. It's set up with, if you really do need help, it's going to cost you so much you decide not to get it. There's so many people who don't even get surgery now because they can't afford the deductible and the coinsurance. This is what the system was designed to do, and that was their method of lowering healthcare costs. You know, how about prevention? They talk about it all the time, but they don't do it. It's not even in this bill, really. Their idea of prevention is contraception. That's their idea of prevention. And abortion. Yeah. That's what they're really pushing in this whole Obamacare bill. It's not about wellness. If it were, then we would be we'd have a conversation about getting rid of high fructose corn syrup, about taking fluoride out of the water, about genetically modified foods and the expansion of them. Those are all known. Studies have shown time after time they're deadly, they're toxic. Roundup, perfect example, glycophosphate, or I think it's called glyphosate. It's the ingredient in Roundup. That stuff's everywhere. It's even in the genetically modified seeds. And it's been shown to be an absolute carcinogen that causes breast cancer. But they're allowed to have that in California water, 1,000 parts per billion. That's killing people. Where's the government when it really counts to actually do something to help us? Instead of big gulps and popcorn, maybe they ought to spend time on cleaning up the food supply, cleaning up the water supply, not allowing people or corporations like Monsanto to run buck wild, and people in the pharmaceutical industry with these vaccines to put cancer-causing agents, retroviruses, all sorts of things in the vaccines to, quote, boost up your immune system so you can fight some sort of virus. It's killing people. But because that's where the money is flowing from, it's turning a blind eye to it. So when people like that congressman talk nonsense about it's not fair, it makes you want to slap them right in the face, really, just pop them in the head for saying things. Maybe it's out of ignorance, perhaps. I don't necessarily believe that. It's hubris. It's who cares about people. I'll just say whatever I have to do to get a vote, but I'm going to take care of me and mine, and everybody else can go. You know, that's really what's going on.
Let's see. Do you think, take your average congressman, and some of them are well below average, but take your average congressman, do you think that person can be a medical expert?
No.
A military expert? An economist? And yet that's what they say they are. I wonder how many times Pelosi has put on boots and been in a foxhole. So she's an expert on, and then there you got Feinstein that's the expert, the head of the Intelligence Committee for the Senate. And then you got the whole bunch of them writing Obamacare.
Wait a minute. They didn't write it. Okay, they did not write it. They didn't read it, and they didn't write it. It was written by special interest groups. So let's be clear. And most of the stuff that they pass, they don't write either.
True. But they're experts.
And they don't read it either.
And they don't read it.
What they do is get some money, and they get talking points, and they get their aides to do most of the crafting, and they just sit back and then whine about how hard they work when they only work maybe 4 days a week. And most of the time, they're about raising money. They should be removed, every single one of them. They are not serving the American people at all. And all the kangaroo nonsense up there about the NSA and this and that, they voted for the Patriot Act. What did you think was going to happen when they could troll your emails? And AT&T, this is not news. AT&T was taking information, and so was Verizon, what, about 4 or 5 years ago? Maybe longer. I knew about it. This is not new. I mean, the fact that it's coming out now, okay. But what are you going to do about it? You're going to reverse the Patriot Act? That's not going to happen. No one's going to go to jail as usual.
I think you hit it on the head. Nothing's going to happen. When was the last time something did happen?
Never. And this is not a Democratic or Republican thing. They're both the same. They both do the same things. You know, this administration has doubled down on what the past administration did. They put a different face on it. I have to say their rhetoric is slightly different because if you do argue with them, then you're a racist. They didn't use that in the last administration. Now you're racist, sexist, They don't use the anti-American. They don't use that too much, but it's the same thing.
You know, bringing that up, I was watching some of this. You know, they lie. And it's just like you're sitting there, how can this guy be talking? Just lying and doesn't faze them.
Doesn't faze any of them because there's no consequence.
No.
Because they think that we're stupid. They have no respect for the American people. As a doctor, they have no respect for me and my profession or for the patient. They could care less. All they care about is concentration of power and pumping more money into the system. I mean, medicine is just one example, all right? The education system is the same way. I mean, how much money have they pumped into the education system and they're producing less smart people, to put it mildly? Question anything.
I got to ask you, how do you feel about this $100 million week in Africa?
Jeez. It's a waste of taxpayer money.
Yeah, all of it. You know,
is it really necessary? How many vacations do you need? What about, you know, the fact that we're in deficit, that we're, you know, we have spending limits? What about any of that? It doesn't matter, though.
No.
It doesn't.
This is what's sick.
I can't say the American people aren't upset because the media doesn't, even if they were, the media wouldn't put it on. So now you have the media they're like a big blanket over this whole situation. They cover for them, they cloak for them, they spout their talking points. But again, it's all about corporate driven. Who owns NBC? Who owns CBS? Where's the money going? Where does the money come from? If you ask yourself that question, it's not hard to figure out that they don't serve your interest. Every commercial that you watch pretty much on a news show is some sort of drug company, GM, or some sort of car thing. It's not like this show, I sponsor myself. No one pays me. I'm not making a dime doing it. I'm doing it because it's coming from my heart, because I really want people to understand exactly what's going on. I don't have a dog in the hunt, and I'm not making money off it. I don't gain from it, except the fact that I love what I do. Any doctor who actually is in a position that they trained, I think, maybe 15, 20 years ago, knows what medicine was like. And if they're paying any attention, they can't possibly be happy with the direction that it's going. From more regulation, to more regulation, more control, less patient care, all about numbers. It's not about health. It's about politics, and it's about business. That's, you know, this show started off about ENT, but it's impossible to talk about ENT issues when you're worried about staying open and you're worried about being able to treat your patient so you can get to talk about the ENT issues. The way the system is going, they would love to get rid of all specialists. Surgery would be a thing of the past. If you actually had to have surgery, you have to be within a certain age group because you were, you know, functional and you could contribute. That's what they're trying to do. And all you have to do, this is globalism 101. You only have to look at what's going on. The whole socialized medical system is bankrupt outside of our country. I don't know why they keep using UK as the example or Canada. I'm going to give Antigua as an example because that's part of the UK structure. It's part of the Commonwealth. Their public hospital is going bankrupt. They've now asked the private doctors to pick up the slack for the folks that they can no longer treat in the public system. They only do surgery on emergencies only because they have no money to pay for routine, you know, supplies. That's where this whole thing is going. The UK started outsourcing to private, corporations so they could oversee their system because they were losing money hand over fist. And they already had locked out the elderly. The seniors were already locked out of their system. And once you're a certain age, you don't get certain benefits or certain health care because you're not deemed worthy of it. That was ages ago. I knew that about their system when I was in medical school. It still didn't work. They're still going bankrupt. And it's a two-tier system. Those who have money pay private. Those who don't wait for months and months and either die waiting or don't even have the ability to get state-of-the-art treatment because it's not there. Why would we want to enter a system like that? Why would somebody really believe? I mean, it's laziness. We need to stop letting someone dictate to us. Don't listen to anything I say on my radio station. Look it up. I did. I didn't just talking. I actually live it, work it, read about it. Not that I'm just watching Hannity or MSNBC or something and spouting what they talk about. It's more, you've got to put some work in. If you don't, someone will handle you, and you will not be happy about it.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be back with Medicine on Call, Dr. Elena George, right after this.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that throat itching and tickling, nasal itching, eye itching, skin itching, eczema, and hives are all signs of allergy? A person suffering from allergy does not always have sneezing and a runny nose. If you have noticed that these symptoms are always present year-round, you may have allergies to what you are eating. Foods such as wheat, eggs, dairy products, and corn are present in most foods. Corn in particular is present in most processed foods and soft drinks in the form of high fructose corn syrup. Completely removing these foods from your diet for at least 2 months can, in some cases, stop the symptoms. Keeping a food diary or getting tested for food allergies is the fastest way to find out what foods are causing your symptoms. If you think you have a food allergy, it is important to see a doctor who specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of allergy. By rotating the food into the diet once every 2 weeks, allergies can be controlled and you can still eat the food.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
At Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center, they provide better quality care. They believe that excellent medical care is a right and not a privilege. They are concerned that the current economy has forced people to sacrifice their health. They have therefore reduced their prices to make it more affordable. They will continue to provide state-of-the-art care. They continue to believe that patient care counts above all else. Peachtree ENT Center, concierge medicine without the concierge price. Additional details are available at www.peachtreeentcenter.com. Call their office at 404-591-9100 to make an appointment or for more information. They are located in Atlanta at 1776 Peachtree Road Northwest, Suite 260 North Tower, 2 blocks south of Piedmont Hospital.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. This is Dr. George. I think we've covered a lot of ground on where we stand in terms of the control that we've ceded to this new healthcare system. I still think it's not in place yet. I mean, there's a lot of things that have moved forward, but they still don't have the fuel. They don't have the money to run this, and they don't have the people in it.
My wife and I were talking about this. I shut it down today. I say no more money for Obamacare. Mm-hmm. Part of Obamacare is already there. What would turn upside down and backwards if all of a sudden I said we have to go back to, but I don't even know what back to means. Really.
Fee-for-service, that's what you need to go back to. You know, take the middleman out. I mean, there's so many doctors now that are moving towards private doctors, I should say, independent doctors that have stopped taking insurance altogether. There's an article recently that I read that the doctor stopped taking it, asked his patients to go to catastrophic, meaning you get something $200 or $300 a month, maybe less, and it covers a $10,000, $15,000 deductible. Well, you know what? You don't need to have a huge deductible if you go to the doctor twice a year. Do you really need to carry that much insurance if you're otherwise healthy? No. So if you make a deal with the doctor and you have his, I think it was $45 per visit, flat, no drama. This is what you pay me. And he was making the same amount of money as he was before he was on insurance plans. But I can tell you he probably spent more time with his patients, had more time to himself, hired less people for paperwork and all that redundancy, and was a lot better doctor and a lot happier individual. Why can't we just do that? The insurance companies and the hospitals, make it sound like you will die without them. You know, you can't, if something happens, you're just ruined. It's not true. Most people never end up in that situation, yet they pay $20,000 a year for a family of four. That's what Obamacare now is wrought on us. It used to be 15, now it's 20, and probably going to rise higher. An average family of four, healthy family, probably goes to the doctor four times a year, once per person. How much money did that cost? Maybe $200 total? Who pocketed the other $19,000? Really? So that money, and I made this comment once before, why can't that go into a pot that rolls over? If you don't use it, then it rolls over into, you just keep accruing it. So if, God forbid, something happens and you're 30 and you've been paying it since you were 20, man, you'd have a pretty decent amount of money to pay for your health care. That'll never happen. Those people use it for CEO salaries, junkets, paying Congress, you know, influence peddling. That's where that money goes. It's not for health care. And it's certainly not for you to get your CT or your sinus surgery or whatever, because they want to deny that. They want you to just pay in and never use it. This is what insurance is about, collecting premiums and not paying out. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in business. Let's face facts. So how do you work it? How do you starve the beast? One is, you know, the 10th Amendment, states' rights. I love the states that haven't joined the stupid exchange crap. If you don't have an exchange, the system can't work because it's built on the exchanges. And that's how they gather your information. It's a grid, right? So as soon as you join an exchange, whether you're a small group, 50-person group, whatever, they capture your information as part of their questionnaire. Your name, your middle name, your Social Security number, your tax ID number, if you're your employer's tax ID number, your account information for your bank, your ACH debit account information, all that stuff gets pulled into a central database, which can be accessed by Kathleen Sebelius, NSA, FBI, you name it. So now you're caught in this grid. No matter where you go, you can quit your job. You'll have to update your system, and they can track you. They know exactly how much money you make. Oh, I forgot. You have to put in your tax return. So they know how much money you make every year. If you make more money, you have to pay back what you supposedly didn't have the year before. So it's never like it's all running. So you may have a bad year and lose your job and go end up totally covered, totally subsidized, but then you get a really good job the next year. You got to pay that year and the year that you didn't get covered. This is never something that you never pay. I said it, I'm going to predict it again. You will never see a tax return because it'll never be in your favor. Because they always have a running tab of what you make, where you make it. There is no working off the books unless you're a legal immigrant. Then I think you can go for the gusto. Just end up in an ER and just game the system to your heart's content. Those guys actually probably will benefit from this. But an American citizen will end up being ID'd in such a way that they'll never be out of the grid unless you die. Because you're always either working or should be working, or you're on government assistance. And either way, they know you, they know where you are, they know what you're making. So your anonymity is over. And gee, you wonder, now that you know the IRS hunts people because of political affiliation or because they think you're insane or because you're a troublemaker, maybe they might do a little bit more on you. Maybe you'll get audited a little few more times, make sure that they get every penny from you. I mean, this is just the system that it's not about health care. 40 new IRS rules, came into effect under Obamacare. 40.
You were mentioning the doctors not taking health insurance, and I thought of Dr. Wright out in Kansas, isn't it?
Yeah.
I know you all are under the gun constantly, literally, with the crossing of the T's and dotting of the I's from the codes and
sure.
All of that stuff. If you're Dr. Wright, he's free of that.
Yeah, that's the awesome part about this. You don't take that crap. You don't have to enter that system. The only thing that's saving us right now is the fact that it's not tied to our licensure nationwide. Massachusetts, no. And I think Vermont may be doing the same thing. Any doctor practicing in those states must take their universal health care, their insurance. Otherwise, they will not be practicing. And that means doctors, nurses, physician assistants, the whole healthcare arena is under that auspice. And I'm positive that that's what's going to go federal when time comes, because there won't be any, there's no doctors in the system. Where they've outsourced as much as they can. I guess they can outsource more. And so, again, we're talking about doctors coming from other countries who are happy to have a job, who will play whatever game they want because they're making so much more money here than they did in X country. They're whatever. So when they tell you in the bioethics committee that this treatment shouldn't be given to this patient in the ICU because their outcome isn't good, you know, Joe, doctor, foreign doctor will go, okay, no problem. And so will somebody who's on a payroll because they won't have a job if they don't play the game.
Why hasn't there been, or has there been, mass exodus from Massachusetts?
There was. But, you know, if not everybody can leave. You know, they have ties, they love their state. You know, I can understand why not everybody left, but there's a significant number. And people who in residency, finish a residency, seem to be leaving the state, who don't have ties. But it's, again, it's all about PAs and extenders being the primary caregivers and doctors being the overseers. So we've taken a back seat and become the administrators, not the front line. That's not how medicine is designed to be. But you understand how it has to be. And under Obamacare, they're training a lot more nurse practitioners, medical assistants, because they need people to step into the role to run the front line. They're not stupid. They know this. But they tried the carrot first. First, you get the doctors in fear who are going to run into the system. And then for the rest of us who are deciding, I'm not playing that game, they'll come after us hard. They're trying to put us out of business now. Next thing they'll do is tie it to our licensure, maintenance of certification. You got to be reboarded, all sorts of nonsense to either run us out or run us down, break our will, etc.
Well, on that cheery note, we'll be back next week.
No, it's not a bad note. The point is, don't play the game.
Don't let it happen, exactly.
As a patient, don't go to the ER. Go to an urgent care. Go to an independent doctor. For those of us who are still private practice, we need to all join together and actually refer to each other. Stay out of the hospital system. Run a parallel system. Again, tale of two cities.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I'll put a plug in for North Atlanta Urgent Care. They're fantastic folks. Treated me nicely, and you referred me there, Dr. George, and it was a very good experience. With that being said, we'll be back next week. I hope we'll see you again next week, and stay tuned for more on America's Web Radio.